拍手の中を、この間にお出かけくださいましてありがとうございます。私たち聖書の中から、秘められた宝を見つけようと探求している者たちにとって、今回は実践の場として、このような集会を企画しました。実践の場、それは私たちがこの世でどのように生きるかということですね。聖書の学びをただ机上の論理にしておくのではなく、実際にそれを用いてどのように私たちの実生活の中で生きていくか、そういうことを今回3人の英国からの講師を招きまして、いろいろとお話を伺いながら学んでいきたいと思います。それではもう時間が来ておりますので、この集会を始めたいと思います。で、今回この集いの通訳を担ってくださいますのは伊藤満氏です。それでは、3人の講師の方々に、最初アンナ・ファンセット氏から自己紹介の形でお話をしていただきます。
So hello, my name is Anna. I am the storyteller for today. I've been storytelling professionally since about 2009 in the UK. I tell a lot of stories from the Scottish tradition, but today I will be telling stories from the Bible. I used to be the chairwoman of the Grampian Association of Storytellers, and I was accredited through the Scottish Storytelling Centre. And I'm a member of the Society for Storytelling, which is an English society. And I've told stories in a number of different countries. Outside of storytelling, I have an academic career. I have a PhD in English literature, and I teach English. Thank you very much.
スコットランドでストーリーテラーとして訓練を受けて、で、まあ、向こうで、まあ、一応理事を歴任しました。で、まあ、その後ですね、各国で、まあ、こういったのストーリーテラーをやっておりますということですね。で、専門は英文学を専攻しましたということです。以上です。
I am ChrisI am working in Japan for 1 year with JAXA, and I run a lot of discussion groups at my church in the UK. I like to encourage people to think about, to share ideas, to try and be more clear about how we think.By listening to other people's ideas and contributing their own. I know this is slightly different in Japanese culture, so after Anna's stories, we will try this, where we all contribute different ideas and together work out what we think.
私はクリスと言います。今、JAXA ですね、あの航空宇宙、この前の瞳でちょっと問題になりましたよね、あのところで今働いていますということです。で、英国で1年間働いているので、4月に来られました。来年3月なんですね。で、英国では教会ですけれども、教会員なんですが、教会でいろんなグループを作ってまして、まあ、あの他人、他の人が、まあ、いろんなことについてどのようなことを考えているかですね、そういうようなことについて、まあ、今そういう話し合いを持っていますということです。ですから、まあ、今日こういった違った、まあ、日本とはちょっと環境は違いますけれども、まあ、いろんなトピック話題について、いろんな考え方があるということで、それについて、まあ、違った考えを互いにこう出し合って、まあ、一つの結論といいますかね、そんなこと言わなくてそんなことをやっていきたいなと。いうふうなことを彼は感じは言ってました。
So hello, my name is John. I'm married to Chris. I'm also here for 1 year. I'm working at Tokyo Institute of Technology. So I have two jobs or two roles to do. First of all, I'm a professor of mathematics, and half the people I meet, that means that they don't like that. And I'm also part of the leadership of a church. And the other half of the people, they don't like that. So I have very few friends. But, and so in our church, my responsibility is for training people in getting to know and to use the spiritual gifts and to know the power of God to do things in their lives. Thank you. Very nice to meet you.
ジョンと言います。1年間東工大、東京工業大学で客員教授で数学を教えるということです。で、まあ、彼は2つ役目があります。まあ、1つは数学を教える。まあ、あまり好きでない人もいるかもしれません。あと1つはイギリスの教会でリーダーを、しておりまして、まあ、1つの、まあ、教会員、まあ、訓練をしている。ということです。まあ、どうですかね。ということでした。
はい、ありがとうございます。はい、それでは、第1部に入りたいと思います。今日は、アンナ・ファンセット姉妹、ファンセット講師ですね、に聖書から3つの例えを語っていただきます。そして伝統的な英国の語りで、それを始めていただきます、それでは最初は砂上の楼閣、そして良き隣人、最後は宝刀息子になります。最初5分、そしてその次10分ぐらい、そしてその次が30分ぐらいということで、全部で5分、そして10分、5分5分ですね。そして最後が30分ぐらいということで、まあ、大体40分から45分ぐらいのストーリーテリングになります。それでは、英語だけで、通訳を入れないで聞いていただくことにいたします。で、お手元の資料には、その内容の用紙が書かれていますので、それを見ていただければ、どのような内容かということはお分かりになると思います。
Hello again. So today I'm going to tell you three stories, and the first one is short, and the second one a little longer, and the third one will be the longest. So the first story started many years ago.At a time before many of our stories were first told, and at a time before many of our songs were first sung. And at this time, there was a small village, and the small village was next to a desert wilderness area. So there was a lot of space. And in that village, there lived a man. And that man lived with his family,with his mother and father and some of his siblings. But the time had come for the man to think about getting married. And because he was thinking about getting married, he had to think about getting a house for himself. And because this was such a long time ago, there were no estate agents to go to. You couldn't get the catalogue of houses and flick through them. You couldn't go online and look at what you wanted. No, no, no. At this time, if you wanted a house, you had to go and build it yourself. So the man went around the village and around the outskirts, and he looked for a piece of land where he could build his house. And he found a plot that seemed quite sensible and safe.And he decided he would build his house there. So he called his friends, the other young men, and he said, come on, help me build my house. And they all came along happily enough. And he said, right, we need to go to the quarry. We need to get stones and rocks so that I can build a strong foundation to my house. And all the young men were like, ugh, too much hard work, ugh. And they went back to the village.So then the man called his father and his uncle.
just a few of the older men who were a little bit more responsible. And he said to them, please, can you help me build my house? I need to go to the quarry and get good, strong stones and rocks. And they said, of course, because they loved him dearly. And they came with him and they went with him to the quarry and they found big rocks and heavy stones and they carried them back to the site he had chosen. And back at the site, they dug deep holes and they put the rocks into the holes and they settled them one on top of another so that the foundations of this house were strong and firm. And then from that onto the foundations, he built the rest of his house, the first floor and the second floor above it. And when his house was completed, he went back to his parents and they gave him furniture to fill his house. And his mother gave him soft furnishings as well, carpets for the floor, maybe pillows and cushions for the sofas. And they also brought him plenty of food. And he held a big party, and all of his friends from the village came. And the house was comfortable, and it was pleasant. And one of his friends, a man of about the same age, decided that he too wanted to build a house, that he wanted somewhere nice to live, pleasant to live. So he called all his friends around, and he said to them, come, help me build my house. And they said, oh, well, help, but you're not going to make us go and get those stones and rocks, are you? And he said, no, I don't need any of that. We'll build the house without a foundation. And he found a pleasant area in the village. And he built his house straight onto the sand. And he built the first story and the second story. And his family brought furniture and soft furnishings and food. And they had a big party, and he settled into his house. And the summer came, and the summer passed, and both men enjoyed themselves in their houses. Then as autumn came, as the birds flew back for winter, and with them they brought rolling dark clouds, heralding bad weather. When the autumn came, things changed. The rain started to fall. And it got heavier and heavier and heavier. And the wind started to howl around the house within the village, screeching and blowing. And when the wind was howling, the lightning flashed and the thunder crashed. And in the house with the strong foundations, the man sat, and maybe he had a blanket around his shoulders, maybe he had a cup of hot milk by his side. And he listened to the storm, he listened to the rain, he listened to the wind, he saw the flash of the lightning and the crack of the thunder. And he was quite happy in his house with its firm foundation. But in the other house, the house built on the sand. When the rain came, the sand below the house got wet. And when it got wet, it started to shift. And when the wind blew, the shifting sands moved the walls of the house one side to another. And as the lightning flashed and the thunder crashed, and the rain fell heavier and heavier and heavier, and the wind blew faster and harder, the house with no foundations fell around its owner. And that is how the story ends. And it ends with a question. What is the best way to build the foundations in our lives?
聖書では、良きサマリア人として、お話が載っています。それでは、引き続いて、良き隣人のお話を一つにしましょう。
And the second story also started many, many years ago.
And it begins with a man who wanted to make a journey. He wanted to go from his town to a town far, far, far away. And again, because this was a long time ago, there were no cars or planes or trains. There weren't even any buses or coaches to take him. So the man had to walk. And he got himself some comfortable walking clothes, and he got himself a splendid walking stick. And he bundled everything he needed for his journey, his own belongings, and the items he wanted to sell in the other town. And he bundled them up, and he put them on his back. And he carried a big jar for water, and he planned his routes, for it was a hot place where he lived. And he had to make sure that he could find wells or fountains at every stage. Also, there were a lot more wild animals at that time, so he took a little dagger to protect himself against them. And of course, he brought his money to pay for what he needed along the way and to pay for what he needed when he got there. So he set out, and the journey was a long one. And he traveled the first day, and at night he set up a camp and he slept under the stars. And he traveled the next day, walking the whole way. And again, he slept under the stars. And on the next day, he was on the loneliest part of the walk. He was on the part of the journey where very few people came. And he was walking, he had a big hat to protect himself from the sun. And he was tired, and he was hungry, but still he kept on walking. And again, the land was quite desert-like, with sand and rocks and little pebbles. And as he was walking, he heard what sounded like the pebbles moving. And he looked round to see if perhaps an animal was coming toward him. But when he looked round, he saw instead the glaring, angry face of a man. And before the traveller could react, the man was around by his back. He grabbed him by the arms, and he noticed that the man, the attacker, had friends with him, and their faces were all like thunder. And these men, these attackers, they took everything off him. They grabbed the hat from his head. They knocked him to the ground, hit him in the face, bashed his ribs against the rocky ground. They took from him his little dagger. They took from him his gold. They took from him his big bundle on his back. They took from him his comfortable boots, his sturdy walking stick, and even his comfortable walking clothes. And they left him on the ground, bleeding and bruised and suffering. And the traveller lay face down. He tried to get up, but as he pushed, he couldn't raise his body from the ground. And his face was in the dust, so when he tried to breathe, the dusty sand would get caught in his nose and in his mouth and his throat, leaving him gasping. And he hoped and prayed that someone would come. But this was a lonely road, a lonely, lonely area. And the minutes turned into hours, and nobody came. And the man on the ground got more and more thirsty, but his water jar had gone. He got more and more hot without the hat to protect him from the sun. And his skin without his comfortable clothes were getting burnt. And just when he thought he was going to sink into death, he heard a sound which brought him hope. Sound of someone walking quickly along the path. And of course the traveller, his face was in the sand. He couldn't see who was coming, but we can. For the man that was walking so quickly was an important businessman of that time. And he had much to do.
and he had left his home that morning and he was making his way to the big town, and it was important for him to get there before dark. He had much to do, many people to see, much business to transact. So he walked quickly, 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 and he saw the figure lying on the ground. And perhaps somewhere he felt that he should stop. But then he thought of all those people he had to see, that business he had to do, those meetings he had to go to. And he carried on walking. Don't have time for this. Other people's problems. If that man wanted to protect himself, he shouldn't have made himself a target to thieves and robbers. It's his fault anyway. And off he went. And the poor traveller on the ground, the hope died inside him. And he lay there still gasping in the dust, gasping in the sand. And maybe an hour had passed, and he heard a sound again. Footsteps, again. A little slower this time. And of course, he couldn't see who was coming, but we can. For it was a very important religious man walking along the path. And he was going to the town to lead some religious ceremonies. And to hold that ceremony, he couldn't touch anyone or anything that was dead. That was really important. And he saw the traveller, and he was shocked, and he walked over. And he saw the traveller was still breathing. But he thought to himself, if I move him, surely he will die before he gets to the town. And I can't risk that. And he forgot everything his religion had taught him, and he only thought about his own importance. So he turned and he hurried away a little faster than he had come. And again the traveller on the ground, again the hope died inside of him, and he was left gasping still. About another hour had passed, and he heard the footsteps once again. And along came another person, and the traveller couldn't see him, but we can. And this was just an ordinary man. An ordinary man from a town that the traveller didn't even like. And he was walking along, and he was lost in his own thoughts. And then he turned and he saw the traveller lying on the ground. And he ran over to him, and he said to him, "Are you okay?" And he turned the traveller over, and the traveller gasped to try to get some air in. So the man lifted him up and put his arms around him and took some of his own water and fed him the water. And the traveller drank deeply. And then the man gave the traveller his own hat to protect him from the sun. And he dressed the traveller in his own spare clothes from his pack. And he lifted the traveller and he carried him to the nearest village, even though it delayed the man so much. And when they got to the village, the man found an inn, like a hotel. And he went in and he said to the man that ran the inn, "Please help me. Please find somewhere for this man to go. I will pay for him. If you find a room for him and a doctor, if you find him some clothes, I will pay for whatever he costs you, for the room, for his food, his medicine, and his clothes." And the hotel keeper, he agreed to that. He took the traveller in. And of course, the traveller, underneath the care of the hotel manager, underneath the care of that man that had walked along the journey, he soon came back to full health. And again, this story has a question. And the question is, out of the three men that came by, the very important businessman, the religious person with only thoughts of his own importance, not his faith, and the person that wanted to help more than anything, which one of these was the best neighbour for the injured traveller?
良き隣人の家庭を話していただきました。それでは最後の高等息子の家庭に入ります。この高等息子の家庭は30分ほど続きます。通訳なしでそのまま英語を味わっていただきたいと思います。
So this third story, I've modernized it to set it today. So it was a little while after dawn. The sun had risen and was sending beautiful colors over the sky, and the birds were singing softly. And in a large, comfortable bedroom, in a large, comfortable house, a young man sat at the edge of his bed. And he had been awake for a number of hours before the sun itself had risen. But he had not risen from his bed, and he had not washed, and he had not dressed. And the smell of delicious breakfast food was wafting its way up the stairs and under his door and into his nose. But he did not go and eat. Instead, he sat at the edge of his bed and he stared at something across from him in the room. He stared at something that was hanging up on his wardrobe. He stared at a formal black suit. And the young man knew he had to put the suit on. But he didn't want to. The young man had only left school a month or so ago, and his 18th birthday had only passed the previous week. And now it was time for him to join his father and his older brother at his father's company called Parental Industries. And his father and his brother were really excited. But the young man was not. For he had seen his father rise early every day. He had seen his father put on the dark suits. He had seen his father get into the sensible dark cars that don't even drive very fast and go to work day in, day out. And he thought of his own friends from school. For he was quite a rich young man. And he had gone to quite an affluent, quite a rich school. And the school was full of young men and women who were off to go to university, and they were talking about the parties they would go to. The men were talking about the girls they would meet. The girls were giggling about the boys that they would meet. They were talking about the drinks they would have, the parties that they would go to. And here was the young man having to go to work. And as he looked at that suit, he found himself hating it. He hated everything that it represented. He hated the work that his father had done. He hated having to stay with his family when everyone else was partying. So he just glared at him. Glared and glared. And there was a soft at his door. But the young man didn't answer. He didn't want to talk to anyone. But that came again a little louder this time. So the young man said, "Oh, okay, come in if you must." And the door slid open. And there was his older brother. And the older brother was already dressed and he was smiling. And he said, "Oh, come on, it's your first day. This is so exciting. I've been looking forward to this for so long. I can't wait for you to see Parental Industries. I can't wait to work with you. And we are going to have lunch together every day. It's going to be great." Young man, yeah. Lunch with my brother every day. Great. Brother was smiling and he was enthusiastic. And he said, "Come on. Mum's made the best breakfast. Get washed and dressed. Come and join us." The young man knew there was no way out. So he got up and he got washed and he put on that suit and he put on that tie. It felt like he was choking him. And he went down to breakfast.
Ugh, do I have to?
And he sat down, and his mother had made a delicious breakfast. And he smiled a little bit, because she was great at cooking breakfast. And he ate with his family, and his older brother still had that stupid smile on his face. And his mother had a stupid smile on her face too. Oh, my baby's growing up. And his father was there, and his father was so happy. Oh, I can't wait to show you around. And eventually the father and the two brothers went into that sensible dark car and they drove to Parental Industries. And when they got to Parental Industries, it wasn't just a small office that they went to. It wasn't just an office block that they arrived at. No, Parental Industries was a huge company with many different branches. And their headquarters was more like a village than an office. It had a number of high-rise glass buildings, and around them there were paths, and there were even some ponds and trees. And it genuinely looked very beautiful and calm. And not like a place of hard work at all. And the father drove up to the gate to enter, and the security guards came out, and the father smiled and said some greetings to them, and they greeted him back. And the security guards gave the young man an ID badge, and the father and the older brother smiled at him. You have an ID badge? And he took it, okay, put the badge on. And then the gate was opened and the father drove through. And of course, because the father, he was the owner of the company, he had a special car parking space right next to the front entrance. So he parked his car in that. And the father and the two brothers came out of the car and they went into the main building, beautiful, large glass building. And they went into a foyer. And the foyer was large and it was cool. And there was a little cafe, and there were some chairs, and there was a reception desk. And everywhere there were people walking around and talking, sitting at the chairs, talking about business, or having a coffee together before they went to their offices. And people were generally happy and smiley, and everyone greeted the young man and his father and his brother as they came through. And the young man, he tried to smile. All these people in their suits, okay. And the father took the young man to the reception and introduced him to the receptionist and said, if there's anything you need, if you get lost, the receptionist will always be able to tell you where to go, always here to help. And the older brother said, oh, you must excuse me, I need to go to my own department now. So the father said, okay, off you go. And the older brother said to his younger brother, "What's the break? Great." And the father took the young man around the company. There was to be no work that morning. He went to look at all the different branches. And Parental Industries did everything. So some of the departments were very formal. They had a banking department, for example. And in the banking department, there were rows and rows of people sitting at their computers, and they all looked very serious. They were typing away. And on the wall beside them, there was the stock exchange information. And people would look up, and then they would type some more, and they would look up, and they would type some more, and everyone looked very, very serious. And there were clocks showing times from different cities around the world. And the young man thought, this is not for me. But there were other departments as well. They had some practical departments. For example, they made cars. And because they made cars, they had a factory in one of the buildings where they built the prototypes, the first example. And there were men in overalls and they were working away on the cars. And because they were trying out prototypes, they also had a racing ring where they could try the cars out. And they had the bit where you could put the dummies in, you know, the dolls, and send the car off with a remote control and crash it into things and see what happened. And the young man had to admit that was quite cool, but he didn't let his father see that he was impressed. And they also had creative industries as well. So the young man was taken to a floor where everyone was making anime. And people were drawing pictures, and other people were having meetings, drinking lots of coffee, eating lots of donuts, working out storyboards, and people were turning pictures into animations using the computers. But the young man, he didn't want to let his father know that he found anything interesting at all. And eventually lunchtime came, and the father took his son up to the top floor of the main building, which, as I said before, the building was made of glass. And they sat around a board table, and the young man had great views all around the company's compound. And the older brother came up, "Ah, oh, isn't this great? Are you having a great time? Isn't it good?" And the young brother was like, "Yeah, that's a hozo." And the father called for food, and food came, and drink came, and they ate together. And then the older brother went back to his department. And the father looked at his youngest son very intently, and he said, "My son, as you know, half of this company will be yours when I die. And until that time, I want you to make the best you can out of your life. And you tell me what department you want to work in. You tell me what you want to do. I don't mind. I'm not going to put you in banking if you don't want to go into banking. I'm not going to put you into creative skills if you don't want to go into creative skills. You tell me what you want, and we'll see it done." And the young man's face went ugly, and he sat back on his chair, and he said to his father, "You want to know what I want? I don't want anything to do with your useless company or with you. You said half of this company is mine. If it is mine, give me my half now, and I am going to go away and live my life and not live in this horrible business prison that you've made." And he sat back on his chair. And the father, his heart was broken. He was so proud of his company and proud of his son. And he knew his son could have a better life here than anywhere else. But he loved his son so dearly. He knew that he wouldn't be happy if he was forced to stay when he didn't want to. So he found himself agreeing to give his son half of the company now, so his son could go off and do whatever he liked. Well, you can imagine that dinner that night at that family house was not a pleasant meal. The older brother was furious that his brother wouldn't want to join the family business. He was so angry. He saw how upset his mother and father were. He was so angry at his brother. And the mother, oh, she was crying, "The baby's sneaking away." And the father, he was heartbroken that his son was leaving. And he was also heartbroken about what he would have to do to his company in order to give his youngest son half of the assets, half of the money now. For he did not have that amount of money in the bank account. He would have to sell parts of the company. And people who had worked for the company for years would find themselves being, their work being owned by somebody else. And when the rest of the family had gone to bed, the father sat up with his computer and his notebooks, and he worked out which parts of the company he would have to sell. And every decision he made broke his heart a little bit more. But eventually, the decisions were made. Parts of the company were sold, and half of his money, half of his entire estate, was passed on to the younger son. And the younger son did not care about what his family thought of him. He was just so excited to be living his own life, particularly now he had millions in the bank. And he hired a private jet. and he flew to the big city. And he found the most expensive hotel, and he booked himself the best room. And he went out to the shops, and he bought himself the best designer clothes. And then he went back to the hotel, and he paid for the most expensive dinner, and the most expensive drink. And those ones, those champagne drinks with bits of gold flaked into it. And he drank the gold. It's so good to be drinking money. And he went out that night and he found the best nightclubs. And he didn't have to wait in the line because he just flashed his cash and he was allowed in. And at the nightclub, he bought everyone the most expensive drinks. And within minutes, he had hundreds of friends around him, drinking with him and dancing with him. All the beautiful ladies wanted to talk with him. And at the end of the night, he was completely out of it. And he went back to his hotel room and collapsed on the floor. And the next day, he did it all again. Expensive restaurants, expensive clothes, expensive drinks, expensive nightclubs, buying drinks for people he didn't know, dancing, talking with the girls, and getting drunk. And then again the next day. And this went on and on and on and on. And eventually, even though he had the freedom that he had so desired before, he found himself feeling a little bit trapped, a little bit bored. It was all the same thing, day after day, night after night, and people had such expectations of him. So he decided to see what else the world had to offer. So he went to a travel agency, and he said to them, "Give me the most exhilarating, exciting holidays you can find." And they came up with all sorts of things. They said to him, "Why don't you go bungee jumping in the Grand Canyon?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to do that." And he paid for it, and he went and he did it. And they said, "Why don't you go diving in the Great Barrier Reef?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to do it." So he paid and he went and did it. And one after another, he did adventure holiday after adventure holiday. But he still felt like he wasn't quite getting what he wanted. Even when he was jumping out of aeroplanes, he didn't feel all that excited or all that happy. But still, he kept on searching, kept on looking for the next thing. And one day, when he came back from his holiday, he walked into the foyer of the hotel. He was staying in the same place. He had a permanent room. And when he walked into the foyer with its golden chandelier and its waiters bringing you cocktails as you came in, he noticed something was different. Everyone looked harried and worried. They were going from place to place and asking each other questions very quickly. So he went up to the receptionist there and he said, what's going on? Why is everyone looking so worried?" And the receptionist said, "Haven't you heard? There's been a big crash of the stock market. So many people have lost their money. So many banks have gone bankrupt. You need to make sure that your money is all safe." So the young man left straight away and he went to his bank. But when he got to the bank, the bank's doors were closed and there were angry people all around the bank. And he stopped one of them and he said, "What's going on?" And the person said, "Haven't you heard? The bank has gone bankrupt. They won't give anyone any of their money." The young man felt like the floor had been taken out from under him. He remembered that when his father first told him, gave him the money, the father told him, "Make sure you don't put it all in the same bank account." But the young man hadn't listened. And every yen he had was in that account, and now it was gone. All of it. And he went back to the hotel and he had bills to pay. So he took all of his expensive things, his designer clothes and his iPhone and his Rolex watch, and he took them and he sold them. But he only got a very little money Well, there'd been a great crash and everyone was trying to sell everything and not many people could buy. But he got enough money to pay for his hotel bill. He handed that over. Maybe he had about 100 yen left, not enough for anything. So he walked the city and he tried to find himself a job. And you can imagine not many people wanted to employ someone who, when they said, "What's your experience at work?" said, "I don't have an airplane! Yeah!" But eventually, walking around the city, he found a butcher. And the butcher was looking for a cleaner. Not just somebody to vacuum the ground and clean the tables, but someone to clean out the pipes under the butcher's shop. Because when the butcher would kill the animals, the blood and the guts would seep into the special pipes. And they needed a cleaner to go into the pipes and clean out all the disgusting, smelly, old animal parts. And nobody wanted to do that job. But the young man, he had no choice. So he took the job. And it was very low paid. And he couldn't afford to stay anywhere very nice at all. And he went around and he found horrible, tiny, dingy, smelly, dirty little room in the middle of a tiny, dingy, horrible, smelly little shared house. And he had to take that room because it was all he could afford. And the room was disgusting. It had mold growing in one corner and cockroaches scurrying over the floor. And the people in the other room would play music day and night, so all you could hear is boom, 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 boom. It was so hard to sleep. And the young man would go from his smelly, disgusting job to his smelly, disgusting room, and then back to his smelly, disgusting job, and then back to his smelly, disgusting room, and then back to his smelly, disgusting job, and then back to his smelly, disgusting room. And he thought, there's got to be another way. And he remembered his father's company, Crantor Industries. And he remembered how much he had despised, how much he'd looked down on those people that were working in the cubicles, and how much he'd looked down on the receptionist, how much he'd looked down on the cleaners, how much he'd looked down on the coffee shop workers. And he thought, surely it would be better to have the lowest job in my father's company, where at least everyone was treated well and treated fairly, than to carry on here. And he knew his father wouldn't forgive him. But he thought, I'm going to go and I will beg him to give me a job. So he told the butcher he was leaving. He took the tiny little amount of money he had and he bought a bus ticket. And the bus took him about half the way he needed to go. Remember, he'd flown to the city on a jet plane. Took him about half the way he needed to go. And then he was out of money, so he had to walk the rest of the way. And when he had lived in the city, after the crash, he'd only had one outfit and not many places to clean it. So he still had all of those horrible smells from the butcher's shop and his small room clinging to his clothes and his skin and his hair. And as he was walking and as the sun beat down on him, those smells mingled with the smell of his sweat. And you can imagine, by the time he reached the gate of Parental Industries, he was disgusting, smelly, and he looked like a beggar. And he went to the gatekeeper, and he told them his name, and they did not believe who he was. But they called in anyway to ask security. And his father, the owner, just so happened to be at security. And as soon as he heard his son's name over the intercom, he dropped everything he was doing. He ran from that place. He ran down the stairs, didn't even wait for the elevator. He ran down the stairs, 7 stories, out the front gate, and there he saw his son in front of him, and even through the layers of grime and dirt and smell, he recognized his son. And he vaulted, he jumped over the gate, out into the front, and he said, "My son, you've come back, you've come back." And he gave him a huge hug,
and he kissed him, and he smelled disgusting, but the father didn't care, and he clasped him in his arms, and he kissed him again. And the older brother came out as well. And the older brother said, well, you're back, are you? And you've caused so much trouble. Got a bit of a cheek, haven't you, coming back here? I don't think our father should let you in. And the father said, don't be silly. This is your brother. And it's like he's been dead and now he's alive. Let's bring him in. We'll have the biggest party for him. And I will give him a job as my right-hand man. And we will live as a happy family once again.